All right, out there, it's Brad Howard, and this is another edition of the Adonis Lifestyle Podcast. I've got John Barbin on the phone, and today we're going to be covering a bunch of different things. Well, let's not say a bunch, let's just say three. Number one, we're going to be deconstructing fitness headlines, getting to the root of why the fitness industry and fitness industry marketing is kind of nonsensical. We've been getting questions again about eating your way to bigger muscles, so we're going to tackle that really quickly. And then we're going to talk some things about fitness industry and why they can't afford to have things, something like the AI ratio. So John, you had a little project today. You went shopping.
Yeah, we went to the bookstore here. I guess it's called – well, here it's called Chapters. In the United States, it would be similar to Barnes & Noble. And we just went to the magazine rack, and I just looked through the fitness magazine section just to look at what the headlines are, because I realized I don't think I'm out of touch, but I just haven't looked at fitness magazines in a while. So I just wanted to scan headlines and see what kind of info they have or what kind of claims they're trying to make. And one of the first things I noticed was that at least three of the mags had a headline on the front about building the body women really want and stuff that seemed to be very focused towards what we do with the AI ratio. So, I don't know if they're reading our stuff or if that's, if they're catching on to it, but it was kind of interesting that every second magazine I looked at, there was something focusing on that. And another thing I noticed was there's less and less overly jacked up bodybuilders on the covers and more more realistic looking body types, at least on the covers. So I don't know, maybe the whole getting huge at all costs is going out of vogue. And those magazines seem to be getting a lower spot on the rack. So I don't know if that's changing or how the fitness industry is changing, but at least in that one location, they don't seem to be all that popular like the way they used to be.
Right. So basically what you're saying, are you talking about just fitness mags in general or just the big bodybuilder
mags? The big bodybuilding mags are becoming less and less. I've noticed that. And then the fitness mags right. In general, they don't have the shelf presence that they used to have.
Hmm, interesting. Maybe I'll have to check that out. There'll be something for you guys to do. Go check at the next time you go to a grocery store. Lots of grocery stores have them now and, all these other stores. Just go see. Kind of do a little experiment with yourself and see where the prevalence is right now. Because, come to think of it, it sounds about the same. What's really interesting is the fact that you were saying a little bit earlier that even though some of the magazines were talking about some of the stuff that we talk about, you actually said that they were actually starting to quote instead of just being just out there and just saying, hey, this is the body women want. Do five squats and 10 shoulder presses and get your bench up and make your chest as big as possible and chicks dig it. They're actually quoting a lot of the research that we've quoted, since over a year ago. So that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I was going through the article and they were actually mentioning quite a bit of this same stuff that we talk about, but they all seem to be missing the point on the exact ratio. They're just kind of hitting around it and hitting around the idea, but they never really zero in on it.
Right, so it's just more vague and, hey, this is a good idea. Let me tippy-toe around it to see what happens before I jump full force into it. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so let's get into some of these headlines real quick. I think that's going to be really, really interesting.
Okay, do you want me to read them or do you want to read them?
Oh, no, you go ahead.
Okay, so some of the headlines – today I just looked at whatever magazines were on the rack, and it wasn't a lot of them. And all I did was write down the headlines that seemed to jump off the page and were the most sort of ridiculous of them all. So, right now if you go out to the magazine rack, you'll see – these are all the same magazines, so you'll see them all. And this is just a sample of the type of headlines you'll get. Just for January's issues of various fitness magazines. So there's one that this headline: 709 tips to get you jacked, get abs you've always wanted in less than 1 hour per week, 16 rules of fitness you must follow, low carb diet risk, bigger arms in 6 weeks, the 9 biggest training traps to avoid, more energy now, 7 ways to get amped up, cut your body fat by 10%, 13 fat loss secrets, master your carbs. Advanced tips for getting lean, the best power meal, 365 cool health, fitness, and sex and nutrition tips, 15 foods that fight fat, get back in shape, see results in 9 days, a six-pack in 24 hours, drop 2% body fat in 5 days, 78 simple ways to flab, to swap flab for brawn. That's an oxymoron. 78 simple? I mean, that's just ridiculous. 101 ways to work off the Christmas bulge. And that's just a sampling. I left off a bunch of headlines.
Yeah, you know what's interesting? You know what's interesting? Just looking at these right here. There's a couple things about carbs, either low carb risk or fighting carbs, which is pretty interesting.
Or mastering
a lot
them.
Of the stuff. Mastering them, yeah. A lot of the stuff is about fat loss, getting lean, advanced tips. It's always tips, traps, risks, rules.
Rules, things to avoid, tips. They're always insinuating there's a secret that you're missing out on. Like 709 of them. Like this one line says 709 tips to get you jacked. That's just like a carpet bomb approach. They're just hoping that they've said there's enough in there that one of them you'll resonate with. Like they're not even putting any effort in anymore. They're just like, why not say 1,000?
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's true. It's kind of funny.
When was the last time you were given 700 tips? A tip can't be. You can't have 700 of them. There can't be 700 secret tips in the world about anything. It's just too many.
Yeah, well, you know, you only need one.
Yeah, if you could – and this is part of – I guess this is part of where the whole confusion comes in. How can – okay, so let's just say you and I – you know, let's say we're newbies and we want to start working out. And our first resource, which a lot of newbies do, is go straight to the magazine rack and buy one of these. Let's say you happen to buy 4 magazines and figure, well, you know, I'll get 4 or 5 mags and that will be my starting point. You'll be 700, 360. There's well over 1,000 tips just in 3 magazines here, as well as like, right. You know, dozens of things to not do and things to do. Like I can see how after reading 1 month's worth of magazines, you'd be confused for years.
Right. Well, just looking at these right here, let me tell you some things that just kind of pop out at me. Number one, I'd be scared as hell of carbs. I mean, just master your carbs, which means that it's going to kill me somehow if I don't get it under control. The low-carb risk sounds like it's going to kill me. Something else that's kind of a setup plan that I'm looking at is, you know, results in 5 days, results in 9 days.
Well, there's another one in 24 hours.
Yeah, 24 hours. So, I mean, and that's kind of crazy. I mean, it does – these things do great, and they're fine – to, you know, generate interest to get people to open the magazine because that's essentially what it's supposed to do. That's kind of the funny thing. If you really look at the magazine and you go in, the headline is one thing, but when you get to the article, it's definitely not as big and bad as that headline actually made it sound. They kind of water it down a lot of times from what I've found. It doesn't pack the punch that the headline did. But this is really – it's really interesting. I would say out of all of these, probably – 75% of them involve some type of numerical, actually even more, some type of numerical statement or specific statement of a number. You know, 9 biggest, 9 days, 24 hours, 5 days, 6 pack, 13 fat loss, 7 ways, 16 rules.
And they know that. They know that you. I mean, we understand marketing too, and that's one of the things that draws people attention is the 13. Because you know, right when I say 13 fat loss secrets. You're already probably thinking in your head, well, wait a minute, what are they? And it's not even – it may not even be that you actually think they're secrets. It almost might be a test, like kind of a test your knowledge, like a quiz thing. You're probably thinking, I wonder if I know all 13 of them. Right. Things like that. Or bigger arms in 6 weeks, you're like, well, wait a minute, I've seen other programs. What would that look like? So these headlines are designed to catch your attention. And like Brad said, when you get to the article isn't – anywhere near as outrageous as the headline, and it's almost like it starts off really strong, and by the end of the article, it's become ambiguous to the point where they're not even making a statement anymore. It's kind of like a taper from how strong they hit you on the cover to how sort of generic the actual information gets by the time you're done reading the actual article.
Right. Let me tell you what I know guys do. And like I said, I've been in the health and fitness industry for a very long time. I've literally talked to thousands of people face-to-face back when I was health club consulting. And so this is what happens. People will go through the magazines, and they will mix and match everything in these magazines. So a guy will go in. He'll see the bigger arms in 6 weeks, so he'll take that program. He'll see the bench press, perfect plan for kick-ass results. He'll take that, and he'll put that in his routine. he'll take all these things and incorporate them into one routine, thinking that he's getting the best out of everything, and typically either ends up burning out quickly, or gets hurt, or just doesn't get any results at all because it hadn't been his plan hasn't been put together. Well, and then on top of that, and I asked all this the other day. I was looking at a guy, and this is, you know, not to pull a, you know, a marketing thing and say why you should get our stuff, but with the videos and stuff that we have, you know, at least you know you're doing it right. I saw a guy, he on the calf press machine the other day, looked like he was doing like mini leg presses. It was the most ridiculous jerking action I've ever seen in my life, and he actually thought that he knew what he was doing because he was just rocking his way around.
He was on a calf machine but trying to do a squat, kind of?
Yeah, it was the weirdest thing, man.
You didn't even know what he was trying to do?
I thought he was going to – it was like – you know the calf machine where it's not – it's kind of like a donkey calf, but it's at a 45-degree.
It's a hip sled, yeah.
Yeah. But it's just calves, yeah. And you just – you grab the sides and you press up. And
that's it.
And he was just bouncing up and down. I swear it looked like he was going to break his knee.
Mm-hmm.
Or both. I was like, good gracious, man. But see, that's the other unfortunate thing about it is that, you know, he probably – like I say, I don't like to conjecture about a lot of stuff, but you just see it so much and, you know, it's hard. It's hard because you know that this is where a lot of that knowledge, quote-unquote knowledge, is coming from.
Well, yeah, because reading these headlines, why would I do anything besides – okay, so if I was going to mix and match, I would pick the six-pack in 24 hours because why not? That's only a day. I can handle a day. I'll toss in the 2% body fat decrease in 5 days because that's not a bad 5-day goal. But then why wouldn't I just go to do the – like there's another headline here, get back in shape in 9 days. Why would I do that one when this one says drop body fat in 5 days? And then up here, why not hit the bigger arms and see – like I can see how people just are like – if you try to patch all these together, I bet you half of them don't even fit with a lot of these rules are probably contradictory or you can't lay them on top of each other because then – you know, you could end up being told eat, you know, 30% carbs, but then on another article it's 40% carbs, but then in a different article it's 25%, but then another article is telling you to cycle them. You know, this one, I mean, which one do you want to believe? So, like,
yeah, that's probably what you, I'm not going to say that's what you should have done, but it would have been interesting if you would have taken, okay, so let's look at, if I'm just looking at fat loss, let's just tackle this side because obviously we're going to handle the muscle building thing in just a little bit, but just from these headlines, if I want to lose body fat, I would have probably read the Get Abs You've Always Wanted in Less Than 1 Hour a Week. I would have read that article. And then probably the low-carb diet risk new study, I probably would have read that. The Cut Your Body Fat 10%, I would have read. 13 Biggest Fat Loss Secrets, Master Your Carbs, Advanced Tips for Getting Lean, 15 Foods That Fight Fat, Get Back in Shape, See Results in 9 Days, because that typically means, I mean – generic stuff like that typically means a fat loss type of a thing. 6-pack at 24 hours, drop 2% body fat in 5 days. 78 simple ways to swap flab for brawn. I would, and 101 ways to work off the Christmas bulge. I guarantee you, kind of like just what you were saying, that there may be some shred, one common thread, which would be to eat less, but it would be so disguised as of that, what you were actually doing, that you probably wouldn't even have picked it up.
Well, every single one of those can only – exactly. They're going to the only way any of these can deliver on the claim is to get you to eat less. But in this case, they're disguising it 101 ways. In this one, they're disguising it 78 ways. That's it. View the number, like the 78 simple ways to swap flab for brawn. That's just 78 ways to disguise and dress up the idea of eating less. And 101 ways to work off the Christmas bulge, that's 101 ways to eat less. That they're just not going to tell you that. I mean, that's the 15 foods that fight fat. Every single food can fight fat as long as you eat less of it. So I can see where the fitness industry sort of mass confusion machine, I don't even know what you call it anymore, it's going strong. I mean, these headlines are very similar to what you would have seen 15 years ago. And, you know, in 15 years before that, they've gotten a little bit more contrived. But in general, this just will never end. And then if you go to the magazine rack next month, you'll end up with a list almost exactly the same as this. But instead of 700 tips to get you jacked, it'll be 650 tips. But how many tips could there possibly be? Like, there's just not that many different ways. It's not like the human body works differently next month than it did this month. If there's enough information, these headlines are giving would insinuate they're giving you enough information to last a lifetime.
Yeah, check this out. I just thought of something really quickly. So let's do a little exercise and let's see what headlines actually punch better. So if I said, cut your body fat 10%, you'd be like, sweet. But if I said, cut your body fat 10% by eating less, you'd be like, no, I already know that. I'm not gonna read that. Mm-hmm. Or if I said 13 fat loss secrets, you'd be like, sweet. But if I said 13 ways to eat less, you'd be like, sounds like a bunch of work. Or if I said master your carbs, you'd be like, sweet, a trick. But if I said master how to eat less, you'd be like, oh, that's
master your carbs by eating less. If you just keep adding in what the actual thing is, it's not going to work.
Yeah. If I said drop 2% body fat in just 5 days, you'd be like, sweet. But if I said drop 2% body fat in just 5 days by eating a lot less.
Yeah, by eating tons of way less.
Here's how it would be. Drop 2% body fat in just 5 days, all by eating nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just not – yeah, exactly. They understand this. Like, you know, anyone who's publishing one of these magazines has got to have punchy headlines, and that's why these headlines are written the way they are. They're designed to get your attention emotionally and then get you drawn into the article. And beyond getting you to pick the thing up and open it to the article, the headline's also designed to frame your mindset while you're reading the article. So if the article starts off with a tip, you know, 15 tips for whatever, you're going into reading it with the mindset that, oh, I'm going to get these handy little tidbits of information. If you see a headline that's master your carbs, you're not going in looking for tips as much as you're probably looking for a little bit more information. Now, advanced tips for getting lean, now you're probably, when you read that one, you're probably expecting a little bit more information than something's just tips. So it the headline does frame how you're gonna read the article. And that's calibrated, you know, they know what they're doing there too. Like the low carb diet risk, you know, new study. That one, you're probably not expecting a tip at all. You're probably expecting a fair bit of information and probably some science-y talking stuff in there too. So, 16 rules, it says here, that you must follow. Like those are gonna be probably longer than what you would expect out of a headline that says a tip. So they know what they're doing when they're trying to frame your mind and what to expect on the inside. But all of it is just – these are all just convoluted ways of saying the same thing over and over again. But they're never really going to tell you the base underneath it all. This is very, very simple answers. And this gets into – I'm sorry. I was just going to say this gets into kind of what I was going to say here, the idea that having open-ended – undefined goals allow these headlines to get your attention every month and for years on end. So if your goal is just this sort of undefined getting bigger or getting stronger, that can go on forever. That's not a specific goal, and that you could – it doesn't matter how big you are now. There always is such thing as bigger, and there's always such thing as stronger. It doesn't mean – I'm not saying that either of those are actually possible, but I'm saying the goal itself – you can choose to define you can choose to have an undefined goal like bigger. So you can do that for the rest of your life. It doesn't mean you're ever going to get there, but you can have that in your head. Same with losing weight or losing body fat. You can always think leaner, like leaner than wherever you are. If you just define it as leaner, then that you can't get there, because wherever you are, you're still defining your goal as leaner than this. So with the AI ratio, I just thought about this today. The industry can't really work around something like the AI ratio, because there's like borders on either side of it. There's a size associated with it and a leanness associated with it. And once you're kind of there, there's not too much further to go. So, there's nowhere to go in either direction, really. I mean, you could, once you're there, if you don't like how lean you are, you might want to get a bit leaner, but then you're straying from the ratio again. And then it's like, well, what am I doing here? So I can see how the industry would rather you not pin down an exact size at all and rather keep you wanting to go bigger or leaner or bigger and leaner and just doing that literally forever.
Right. And the funny thing about that, too, again, we still get back into that whole freedom aspect of it as well. You know, it's a – if you read all this stuff, every single one of these things pretty much is – is they should just put change your life, low-carb diet risk. Change your life, nine biggest training traps to avoid. Because all this stuff involves making this huge-ass change to get the little results that we talk about all the time, which is really, really, really interesting. And the other thing about this too, this is what I wanted to ask you because this is what I call black hat. This is kind of naughty, but my gut feeling, and I'll have to look at it, is that each of these articles is actually written specifically to feed into a specific ad. So let's say if I've got Master Your Carbs or, you know, something for getting lean or whatever like that, I guarantee you the next ad that you're going to see is a fat loss ad somehow, some way, some type of supplement or whatever. I would guess.
Oh, that's not that, but that's true. Right. That type of stuff happens in this industry. So like the magazine editors have to be friendly to what is being advertised in the mags. They can't afford to have an ad that slanders or is in direct opposition to any of the products that they're promoting. So you and I couldn't, even if we put together a really good, did a research lit review and came up with like pretty definitive research saying that, you know, a particular supplement doesn't work, or is like useless or even harmful, we could never get it published in one of these magazines if any of the supplement companies that advertise in this magazine sell that supplement. Even right. though there's good scientific research to show that you should never take it and probably the public should be warned about it so to speak, you'll never find it in one of these magazines, which right. is where so most people go to find information about supplements. And like right. you said, the editorial space can be purchased by the – or be handed to the advertisers. So when you're reading – and like you said, when you're reading an article that sounds favorable about a particular ingredient, lo and behold, the ad right next to it is promoting a product that sells that ingredient, and that – article you just read that you thought was just by an unbiased editor or author is actually written by somebody that works for the supplement company that paid for the ad space next to the article. Did that come out? Did that make sense?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's the way if I was advertising in a magazine, I would want to make sure. And because we do ad buys. I mean, there's no secret in that. I mean, people have seen us on Facebook and stuff, and I handle all that. But if I was going to do an ad buy, I would want to make sure that I was beside something that was relevant, that drew somebody's eye in, and they're in the frame of mind to be receptive to what we have to offer, or at least, you know, what we represent. And I mean, that just makes sense. I mean,
well, and that's you know, like when you're watching football, there's going to be commercials geared towards guys about beer and cars and stuff like that.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. But what you're saying is that unlike with TV, where TV programming is TV programming in the magazines, a lot of times the actual programming can be determined, or influenced by whoever's advertising in the magazine.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yes, for sure.
Okay.
For sure. I mean, it gets even deeper than that, and that's more stuff for the you, but that's your first taste of how – I mean, you have to look at magazines with a grain of salt, and I would be very – I mean, my advice would be skeptical of every single word written in there, ads and articles. Like everything in there is it's kind of like a little – picture a movie where – brands and other names of other companies and real names of real people don't exist in movies. You know, like when you're watching a movie, things in the movie, there's a soda that they'll be drinking, but it can't be Coke. It's got to be the movie brand. Or the big actor can't be the real name of a real actor, but it's the one in the movie. So it's kind of mm-hmm. like that in the magazine. Even all of it it's in its own little pseudo world, and the truth can't really, even though you know there's another truth, you'll never see it in that magazine. But then the magazines collectively are all of them kind of are part of that one big network because it's the same advertisers in all those magazines. So it's kind of like when you step into that, you know, it's like going into a pub. Most pubs are either Pepsi or Coke. So in that pub, you know, you order a Coke, they're like, oh, we only have Pepsi. So it's almost as if Coke doesn't exist in there, even though in the rest of the world it does, but it doesn't exist in that building. That's what these magazines are like with supplements. The opposite opinion of any supplement that, you know, the opposite opinion that would suggest any supplement isn't worth taking, that opinion does not exist in those magazines. Whether or not scientifically that's true is irrelevant to them. They don't care. They're their own little self-contained community, and by you going in there and reading their stuff, if you didn't know it, what you're doing is accepting that everything you're reading is a biased view that supports supplements no matter what the research says.
Right. Yeah. It's interesting because I'm not going to say I'm even immune to this stuff, because I'll get looking in magazines and stuff, like if I decide I'm going to do some cardio or whatever, just from general conditioning and, you know, maybe I'll get a walk on a treadmill or something, set it at an incline and just kind of thumb through a magazine and see what's up. It's really interesting. You know, you're like, really? It's kind of how, even though now I'm more skeptical about it, there's still a part of my head that goes, really?
Oh, like when you see a claim and you're surprised by it?
Yeah, you're just kind of like, really? But the first thing you kind of think is that, well, what if it's true?
Well, yeah.
What if it is?
And then, you know, and people have this assumption that magazines are somehow like peer reviewed, and that the words written in them are somebody somewhere reviews them for accuracy. Like the magazine editors don't care what people write; they just want to sell. All they're in business to do is sell advertising space. And the punchier and the catchier the claims on the front, if your magazine sells, then that's the people want, and then the people buying advertising space want to be in a magazine that moves a lot. So it's mm-hmm. And the one that moves a lot is the ones with the catchiest claim on the front, which gets us back to the 709 tips to get you jacked claim or headline. Mm-hmm. So it's just this – they're just competing for your attention. So, you know, the crazier the headline, the you know, you get the whole really response, like, you know, where you're like, oh, I got to read that one just to see what they have to say. So, it's kind of a self-perpetuating cycle. And I don't know if you've noticed, but nowhere in here do we ever get to the point of any of this being of any real value or use. Like none of the way this is run is to deliver, or at least it's not based on or dependent on delivering actual useful or scientifically valid content. It's just about selling advertising space and moving magazines and selling magazines.
Right. And you know what the funny part about it is that, you know, if you're listening right now, chances are you've had a chance to read that one report we put out, that Physique is a Weapon report. And the thing is we talk about this exact same phenomenon when we talk about why AI is so important, or so important, because, you know, all these types of headlines are needed to get your attention from what you're doing in your day. And they get crazier and crazier and crazier as you go. Because you have to. You've got so much going on that there has to be something to stop you. And if you assume that, you know, this type of, you know, getting attention isn't happening in your life, and your brain is not taking shortcuts to try to feed data, well, then, you know, you're kind of missing the boat on that, because that's the whole point of kind of what we're doing. You know, get your body into a shape that gets attention right off the bat. You know, that's kind of... it's kind of a way around what we're it's related to what we're talking about in a different direction, but you can see how important attention is to brand name advertisers and magazines, and that being the case, why it should be important to you as well.
Oh yeah, that's the end goal of everything, is attention.
Yeah, right, exactly.
The more attention you have, the more success it'll eventually lead to.
Right. So just look at Paris Hilton. The only thing she's good at is
getting attention. Yeah.
Right, exactly. And you know, that's not bad or good. That just is what it is.
Well, because you can get attention, that means you can influence other people. That means what you do and say matters.
Somehow, some way.
Because the more people that you can influence, the more important you become. Whether or not it's at work, or if you're a marketer, or if you want to become an online figure or an offline figure, whatever it is that you want to do, if when you speak, people listen, that's of value to somebody.
Right. You know what's funny on this thing of attention? Then we'll talk about the muscle stuff. But did you realize that people like Rush Limbaugh and Howard Stern, they say that 50% of their audience are people that love their stuff, that can't get enough, And the other 50% are people that hate them, that absolutely hate them, but tune in just to, so both groups of people just tune in to see what that person's going to say.
And that's true success. When you're that big and you can divide and you can be that divisive. It's kind of like the Notre Dame football team. I keep going back to the college football analogies. But yeah, Notre Dame is a relevant team because half the country absolutely hates them. Actually, more than that. Like, they have their own TV contract purely because people – I'll tune into them just to see them lose. And I'm one of the Notre Dame haters. I don't like what the program stands for anymore. But they're relevant. Like, I don't even like them, but I enjoy watching them lose. And I'm part of the mass of people who college football fans who happen to enjoy watching them and like teams like Ohio State lose. And that's what makes them relevant, and that's what makes them so lucrative from advertising dollars. I mean, if you and I, you know, if you're listening right now, if we had a product we're trying to promote to the college football fans, the number one team we'd want to buy a commercial spot on is Notre Dame, because we know more people are going to be watching them. Whether or not they like Notre Dame is irrelevant. We just know people are watching because they either like them or hate them. But if we wouldn't advertise on any other team because there's less audience. So mm-hmm. And it's all about attention. Like you just said, Howard Stern and Rush Limbaugh. Yeah, Rush Limbaugh must have half the country that can't stand him. But he takes that divisive stand, and people like are fixated to hear what the next thing comes out of his mouth. Some people think he's the devil, and some people think he's, you know, speaking the truth.
Right. Well, you know what's funny is that if people remember from our earlier podcast when we talked about marketing and the ways people use marketing influence devices on you, one of the things in that thing is the enemy. Who's the enemy? And Rush and Howard and those guys do a great job of creating the enemy and bonding together the people that are on their team against the enemy, who is, you know, maybe it's Democrats or maybe it's, you know, people that oppress, you know, naked chicks that get to run around the street naked all the time, you know, whatever it is. But then the people that hate them bond together because he's the enemy. And so it's always that us versus them thing. And that's why things like, you know, when we go in here like low carb diet risk, well, the carbs are the enemy. And we can go in this whole enemy thing that like master your carbs. Again, the carbs are the enemy. Body fat, 10%. Body fat's the enemy. So you can the Xmas bulge. I mean, what's the enemy in this thing where we can bond people together? So it's really, really, really interesting that get some more real world stuff on how things are actually positioned in front of you to get you to either make a buying decision or to agree with a certain person's point of view.
And it's easy to fall into one of these camps and get caught up listening to people like Stern and Limbaugh it's easy for marketing, and you know, multimedia is good at drawing your attention away from what your goal or focus is in your life and putting it somewhere else. And it's easy to get sucked into that, becoming a fan of one of these type of, you know, personalities. And is it really now? Are you doing it purely for entertainment's sake, which is fine, or do you get caught up into it where you really are taking sides and you really do start believing the hype, and you know, like you read one of these magazines and you get into this idea that yeah, carbs are bad, and then all of a sudden, before you know it, you're in the low carb camp and you start being a champion of that position. But what was the point of that? Like, why did you read that article? The first article that ever got you into that mindset You probably were just looking for some information to try to get your body in a better shape because you had this belief and you knew that having a body in better shape would provide some benefit to your life. So how does that turn into becoming a champion of low carb? So what I'm saying is keep your eye on the prize. Like, what is it, you know, keep your eye focused on what it actually is you're trying to get to and discard things that get in the way. And one of the things that could get in the way is jumping into these identities. This kind of goes back to what we talked about last week, but jumping into these groups to identify with that are completely lost to the point of why you were even reading about a diet or exercise or whatever it was you were reading in the first place.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense because this is going to segue really nicely to what we're getting ready to talk about. But if you think about people like Rush Howard and all that stuff, and talking about listening to someone with what you think you're doing is relatively harmless, but what's really happening is that your mind is being cultivated to a position. And that's what's dangerous about a lot of people. If they don't have a specific goal that they're after before they go to look for information, number one, or number two, look to a coach or someone to help them out, personal trainer or whatever. Because what tends to happen, if you don't have a specific goal in mind, your goal will end up being what that specific guru, trainer, or coach wants it to be. And it might not even be what you want it
to be. Well, let's not even use those words. Let's say marketer.
Well, we could say that. Yeah. We could say that.
That's what that particular marketer wanted you to be. And that's a really good point. So, yeah, you end up losing sight of your goal and end up adopting – I like the word you use there. Your mind gets cultivated to believe a certain way.
Sure, and it happens. I've caught myself doing it lots of times, and it takes somebody to kind of smack you in the face with a fact until you're like, oh.
Well, this is exactly how people get caught up in eating for their blood type, or eating Paleolithic style, or eating, you know, carb cycling style. It's partly to identify. They lose track of what they were trying to eat for, and then adopt this new lifestyle, which, like Brad was just saying, it leads you down this path of buying more and more items that are a part of that lifestyle.
Right. Yeah, it's remember, it's when it was specifically with fat loss type of stuff, the lower and lower your body fat gets, at least from my point of view, the lower and lower your body fat goal is. So up until 10% or 10-9%, I mean, it's roughly easy. You just eat less. But the more and more you get into the lower digits, that's when things become – you start seeing the diminishing returns, and that's when you see a lot of the guys doing things like doing water manipulation and stuff like that to get the look. So, I mean, if your goal is to hit 10-9% body fat or something like that, then all the rest of the stuff out there that's being used to get the people lean, like really lean, like onion thin and all this stuff, not to mention the drugs, but just all the other strategies – They're irrelevant to you because that's not your goal. So you can just kind of take all that 80% of the stuff that's being thrown around at you, you can just wipe that off the table.
And that gets back to the specificity of your goal.
Right,
like
exactly.
Weight loss or getting thinner or losing body fat that's not a goal. That's a general direction, but it certainly isn't a goal. Once you specify the goal, then the technique you need to use or the pattern you need to use becomes more in clear view. Like someone who's 35% body fat and wants to get down to 25% body fat, and someone who's 10% body fat wanting to get down to 5%, they're in different starting points, and they're probably going to have different methods to use. In general, they're both going to have less calories, but exactly how they go about doing it's going to look far different. I mean, the larger guy might just need to eat, you know, less fast food or something like that, whereas the other guy's doesn't have much place to go. He might actually need to be a bit more strict with how he structures his day, because he may already be dealing with not very much food and, you know, already maxed out as much time as he can spend in the gym and those sort of things. So the specificity of the starting point and the end point of the goal changes how any of these recommendations apply to anybody. So, I mean, you know, who said that these 700 tips apply to you? They might only apply to somebody who's, you know, bigger or leaner than you.
Right. Well, I mean, they would apply, but they wouldn't be – it'd be overkill again.
Or you'd need to show up with a very specific goal. Then you could pick – and if one of the tips happened to fit right into your starting point and your finished goal, then that's the one tip that might work for you, assuming the tip has any wisdom in it at all anyways.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about – because the reason we wanted to talk about that – because we got a comment on the blog earlier today talking about you know, eating for muscle gain and stuff like that. We kind of handled that a little bit last week, but the gentleman showed us a PDF file from another website or whatever, and that's fine. And basically, it was showing that this guy gained like 50 pounds after eating like 6,000 calories a day. He was 20 years old. He gained like 24 pounds of body fat, but it said he gained the rest of it was lean body mass, and we've already talked about that. But the reason I wanted to bring that part up was because if you look at the source of who the person was that wrote it, the guy was a powerlifter. So his programs are powerlifting programs. So again, you kind of have to look to where the information is coming from, because for him, gaining fat and all this stuff, at least in my experience, and I think yours too, it's not relevant to those guys. And that's nothing wrong with that. That's just not in their ballpark.
Yeah, they don't care. They just want to be stronger. They don't care how fat they are.
Right, exactly. And so let's kind of work from this a little bit, and because this is kind of where we started, and we can kind of wrap around that. So I guess let me go ahead and turn that part over to you, because it's all you.
What, the eat your way to bigger muscles thing?
Yeah.
Okay, so this keeps coming up, and this plays off of what we talked about last week. It's a part of the way the whole fitness and diet industry works is on unspecified goals and causes and effects of things that you can never really actually measure or pin down. So one of them is this persistent idea that you can eat your way to bigger muscles, that you can actually increase your calories and a specific kind of calorie mix, and that will somehow turn into some anabolic effect and build your muscles. And as long as you've combined the eating with the right workout, you're somehow going to have this magical combination that's just as good as steroids, and somehow you're going to grow to the size of a bodybuilder you see on the magazines. Intuitively shouldn't make a whole lot of sense. But I used to believe this myself. I used to think, well, yeah, you can eat, you know, as long as you're training, you know, you can eat your way to bigger muscles. But that doesn't make a lot of sense when you actually examine it in more depth. Otherwise, wouldn't a lot of people who are just overeating and are obese, wouldn't they also have huge muscles? And if they just tossed in some working out, you're trying to, you know, by that reasoning, all they would have to do is work out and all of a sudden they would have big muscles. But most people that are overweight don't have big muscles. They're no more muscular or stronger than they were when they weren't obese. It's the food turned into storage of fat. It had nothing to do with changing their muscle sizes. And on that same note, if you could actually eat your way to bigger muscles and there wasn't some anabolic response from the food, when you eventually tried to lean down, well, that would just insinuate that eating less food was catabolic, so you would just decrease muscle size back to where you were before, and your net gain would be zero. If you reduced your calories, it reduced your muscle size. So what's going on here is people substituted what happens with fat mass in food. So eating more food increases fat mass, eating less food decreases fat mass, and that's well documented in the scientific literature. Somehow the industry hijacked that and said, no, eating more food will build muscle and eating less food somehow burns muscle. And it's where the starvation mode myth comes from, and it's where the eating your way to bigger muscles myth comes from. And I guess I can see how people sort of get their signals crossed on that one and get completely confused with, well, I can see how people are scared to eat less because they're like, well, if I eat less, I'll lose muscle. But I don't seem to be gaining very fast, so I need to eat more to build my muscle. But then once you've built your muscle, they're scared to eat less. Like, I can see how people are just trapped and don't know where to go with this. And it's all false. None of this actually happens. But I can see how people are frozen. They're just stuck not knowing what to do next as far as trying to build muscle.
Right. And the other thing, too, is that there's this big ambiguity and kind of sleight of hand that nobody really pays attention to, because everybody wants to show a result. Like this gentleman that we were reading his thing, he wanted to show a result to get more clients, and that's fine. And maybe he wasn't, but it's, I don't know how to do it, but how would you actually, other than doing measurements, and nobody ever seems to do measurements, it's always weights, but how would you measure actual muscle gain? Because what he measured was lean body mass, which we all know, if you're eating that much food, it's going to be water. I proved it over Christmas that I gained 10 pounds over a weekend just by eating. And we know it wasn't fat because my body mass, my waist stayed the same. We know it wasn't muscle gain because obviously I didn't get that much any stronger. So,
well, lean, your total lean body mass measurement includes all of everything that's not fat. So all your organs, your bones, and your muscles. This is assuming you even have a metabolic lab or a body composition lab that can even measure this stuff. One of our readers even emailed in saying that he lives close to a university that allows him to go in there for pretty affordable, for I don't know, like $40, and they'll do his comp measurements, which is great. And if you have a school close by that'll do that, go in and test yourself. Now, if you have access to one of these labs, you'll see that food and water register as lean body mass. So you and I could eat our way to a 12-pound increase in lean body mass in an afternoon. We could pack in 5 or 6 pounds of food, drink down 5 or 6 pounds of water, be completely bloated, swollen, it'll hurt, and then we could go into that lab, go into their measuring device, and it would say, wow, you were 12 pounds more lean body mass. And that's part of the sleight of hand. I said lean body mass. I didn't say lean muscle mass. So all the food in your stomach counts as lean body mass. So it's easy to make a quote lean body mass measurement change dramatically with the food you eat. But that's just the food in your stomach. That has nothing to do with your muscle mass. So the only way to correlate a lean body mass measurement to what you would hope to be muscle mass is to take your measurements. I mean, because after all, isn't all you want bigger muscles? Like, I don't think you want bigger lean body mass. I don't think you want, like, a bigger liver or a bigger intestine. You just want muscles to be bigger. So it would make sense that you'd want to measure them to see if they actually are any bigger, which is kind of what we were saying is, you know, do whatever you want. Like, if you don't believe us that you can't eat your way to bigger muscles, go ahead, eat all the food in the world, but actually measure your quads, your calves, your bicep, your upper arms, your forearms, your chest, your shoulders, and your waist. And if you can, go into one of these labs and actually have your, you know, I mean, they're not readily available, but if you happen to be one of these people that lives near a university that has one of these services, go to the lab and do a before and after measurement, maybe 6 to 10 weeks apart, and you'll find out that all of that extra food just goes into fat mass. And, you know, and if I'm wrong, I would love someone to actually produce the results to prove that it actually is possible to eat your way to bigger muscles. But there's no physiological mechanism or proof that that's possible at all. And what's at root of all of this is the smaller male's inability to accept the fact that the amount of muscle you can carry is partly controlled by your genetics, partly controlled by your age, and partly controlled by how long you've been training, and you simply just cannot be as big as a guy who just genetically has more muscle mass than you if you both started training at the same time.
Right, and you know the other thing about it too. We talked about it being if eating a lot of food was anabolic, then the lack of food would be catabolic. And you see this a lot of times. People, and even in magazines or in forums and stuff, talk about they'll eat for mass, but then they'll go to a cut down. But they have to be so careful about it because if they don't do it just right, they're going to lose all their gains, which doesn't make any sense.
Well, it doesn't, and we've actually done these measurements, like. We've actually had access to a body composition lab where people have been measured on their way down, dieting down for a contest, and they didn't lose any muscle mass. We've seen this data. We were shocked. We actually believed all of this stuff back then, and then once we had access to the data, we were like, no, these people dieted down. Muscle mass didn't, lean mass didn't change. The only thing that changed was fat mass. So, I can see how people get confused because they may feel a little bit weaker when they're eating less. So in the gym, their strength might be down 10, 15% on some of their lifts. And then since they're not bloated up and filling a t-shirt the way they used to fill it when they were, you know, fully hydrated, eating as much calories as they want, I can see how they feel a little bit thinner, feel a bit drawn, see their shirt fit a little looser and be slightly weaker in the gym and mistake all of that for, oh my God, I'm losing, like literally muscles just burning away off my body. When really it's just you're less bloated. You don't have a systemic water retention happening right now because you're eating less. And yeah, I mean, because of lower calories, you're going to be slightly weaker just because you just don't have as much food in your system. But in general, nothing's happened to your muscles. They're just slightly less hydrated than they were when you were eating everything you could get into you.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that makes sense to me. I mean, I like to think of it like this and try to follow my train of thought here. So, and this is, I wish that there was a visual here. that I could do. But, you know, if, let's say if there's, we had this line that was how many calories you ate, and say it's like a sine wave or whatever, where you're going up and down below. And, you know, let's just say if you were eating pounds and pounds of calories, that would be muscle gain. And you would gain a certain amount of muscle. And then on the way down, there would be this, let's say there was this catabolic effect, because there would have to be, because, again, whatever calories you eat, it's like the bank, like we talked about earlier. It's like making deposits in the bank. Or it's like putting money on your credit card is probably a better example. If you've got a $500 credit limit and you burn it up to $500, well, you got to pay that back. And so if you want to get down to as lean as you were beforehand, well, that means you're going to have to decrease by that many calories.
Well,
I could see either burning it or eating less, and I could see where people would be like, well, muscle mass, you know, burns more calories, but like,
well, that's
saying,
it's only 5 calories per day per pound, so that's irrelevant. Well, superimpose on your sine wave, so keep that sine wave in your head. If that actually happened, like if eating more calories somehow built some amount of muscle mass, well, why is it that eating more calories also adds fat mass to people? It's this kind of explanation that no one has an answer for, and they just explain it away. Me and Brad used to say it. We were knuckleheads. We used to say that people, you know, getting fat in the name of building muscle was what you know, serious guys did, and guys who weren't willing to get fat weren't willing to put on muscle. And that now I look back thinking we were the two dumbest people on earth thinking that. And because we're assuming that along with all the fat that you'd put on by eating more food, that somewhere in there you were also putting on muscle, and that somehow magically under eating to get rid of the fat would maintain the muscle. So we were, you know, that's in direct contradiction to what we thought the food was doing on the way up. We thought we somehow could make it do the reverse on the way down.
It's like the best of both worlds.
Yeah, exactly. We were trying to create this like situation that couldn't possibly exist without us suspending our disbelief on it working one direction but not the other. Like I don't know if this is confusing. I don't know if this is confusing to people. It's attributing an anabolic response to an overeating, even though you can measure the fact that it's building fat. But then when you undereat, you're assuming there's no catabolic response. So
if this is the case, this is how it would happen.
It would have to be if overeating actually built muscle, then every time you cut back down to remove the fat that you also put on while you're overeating, you'd immediately lose all the muscle that you, otherwise you just get. Otherwise, you could just gain and gain forever. And then beyond that, why would, if overeating somehow did build muscle on its own, why does it put fat on people too? Like how? Or why, I mean, and I know the argument there is, well, because I'm doing a workout that works with the food, but that doesn't make any sense. People have tried this forever, and bodybuilders do it too. They get fat in the off season, then they diet down, and they end up right back to the same size they were before they got fat.
But it's like maybe a 2 pound difference, 2 to 3 pounds.
Which they could have done without eating all getting fat, and which is what they would have built if they just ate at their what they needed on a daily basis.
It seems like the ideal world for something like this would be it to if this were the actual case of how it would work. And you know the funny thing about it, let's just say this. For all practical purposes of what look we're looking for, it doesn't matter either way you look at it, even if it is anabolic and you can't eat to – I'm just going to say even if it is, and you haven't seen the evidence that says it does. But even if it is, it doesn't matter because you're going to lose it all anyway when you get back to – all those gains, you're going to lose them all when you get back to the size that you want to be.
But you never will be because – okay, right. Let's just say theoretically it works. Let's say you could overeat your way to muscle gain. When would you stop? If it actually worked, why wouldn't you just keep overeating forever? And then the entire time you're doing that to try to, quote, gain muscle, you're also putting fat on. So that means you're spending most of the year fat just in the name of trying to gain some. So when do you draw the line to cut it down? Like at what point do you like, okay, that's big enough, now I'm going to cut down? This is guys get trapped in this for decades. They're in their bulk up overeat phase forever.
Right. But that's what I'm saying is that, you know, even if it were the case that you could build, you still have to pack in the negative part of it, which is you still got to get back down to where you really want to be.
Well, and that's when, the industry says you can't diet down because you go into starvation mode and then you lose body fat or you lose muscle mass. And then that's when they come up with all these supplements and intricate, like, HIIT interval training stuff, whatever, and EPOC and all of this stuff to try to keep you in some kind of caloric excess, or at least eating just to your BMR, and then you sort of exercise it all the way, which doesn't work either. Any bodybuilder who's ever actually dieted down for a show, their calories are really low. I mean they measure every single calorie that goes into their body, and it is low. It's like what, like, small girls would eat. And you know, they're miserable, but that's how, I mean, ask any bodybuilder you know who've ever competed and ask them how much they ate and their diet down, and you'll find out it's really low. So, I don't know if we sound jaded or not, but I just can't believe people still think you can eat your way to bigger muscles. I mean, and everyone who asks me, I have the same answer. They're like, because they can't believe me when I say you don't need to eat anymore to build muscle. They just can't believe that answer. So my only answer back is, okay, go ahead and eat, double your BMR, whatever, you know, guys send me numbers like 3,500 calories a day or 3,000, whatever it is. It's a lot. And I'm like, okay, try it. Do it. Like, don't take my word for it. Do it. And take all your measurements, all your body, you know, all your muscle measurements, like legs, arms, everything, and waist. And 6 weeks from now, if your waist is getting bigger faster than the rest of your body, then you know you're putting fat on. And, you know, do a visual and expect. Look in the mirror. Are you getting smoother? Or are you still as lean as you used to be? And, again, like I said, all of this is rooted in, no, guys don't want to accept how slow muscle builds. And they just want to make it faster, and they think somehow they can make it faster by eating.
You know what I was thinking? And like I say, since we're having fun with conjecture and what could be, you would think that if this were possible, that you could eat your way to massive muscles or whatever, that what guys would do or what bodybuilders would do would eat their ways to massive muscles, and then, like, maybe once every week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, or whatever, go to the plastic surgeon and get lipo.
Sure, why not? I mean, think of all the different – if this actually worked – I mean, I don't know, it just doesn't make any sense. No one can give me an answer of how much more food. Like, where's the number? Now, more food make you bigger. Like, it'll make your body heavier. Like, you'll have a lot more water retention. You'll fill a shirt out. I mean, you probably won't fill it out in all the places you want to. But, like, you'll be bigger. Like, all measurements will go up to some degree. But a lot of that's just edema. Now, some of it's intramuscular water, too. Like, the muscle itself will hydrate with more food in. But it's a systemic. Like, it's inside the muscle. It's fat cells, too. It's everywhere. Interstitial. It's all over the place. So you're just going to be bigger, smoother, and bloated. Now, if that's the look you want, then by all means, eat all the food in the world. But no one can tell me where the cutoff is. Like, how many more calories does it actually take to build just muscle mass and not fat mass? And no one has any answer for that, because there is no answer for that. And, I mean, there just isn't. Like, if you actually measure how slow muscle actually grows, people have done these sort of calculations. If you even gain just 5 or 6 pounds of muscle in a year, when you break down what a muscle, you know, 87% of muscle is just water mass anyways, and then the rest of it's the actual protein, and then out of that, how much of it is contractile protein. If you get down to just the amount of protein that's in a muscle as it grows, you're just looking at, a you know, grams a day. So if that's the only thing that's being added to the bulk of your body, you're literally looking at maybe, you know, a couple of grams of protein a day extra.
Right. You know what's funny? Speaking of weights and grams and stuff like this, I read something a little bit. I think it was last night. I was looking up some medicine stuff online to make sure I was, you know, giving the right medicine to my girlfriend or whatever. And because obviously she's not feeling well. But anyway, so I got looking at some fat stuff. Now tell me this: does this sound right? So a pound of muscle. You know how you say people. A lot of people say common knowledge states that a pound of muscle weighs more than a pound of fat. And the way that it's framed, it makes it sound like it weighs like five times more than fat.
Wait a minute. How can a pound of anything weigh more than a pound?
I mean, not a pound, but okay, yeah, you're right. Actually, that's what people say.
People say fat weighs more than muscle. It's like, well, per what? per unit volume, not per unit mass. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, no, that's what I was saying. People will say a pound. I've seen this, and I just
It's like a pound of bricks is heavier than a pound of feathers.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So what I meant was that
just muscle weighs more than fat.
Muscle weighs more than fat, given the same amount of volume.
Right.
Right. And they make it sound like it's five times more, or maybe double, or something like that. But I saw something that, I think it was pretty reputable. Shit, it might have even been Wikipedia, which might not have been reputable, but it basically was saying that muscle weighs 1.1 kilograms per liter, and fat weighs 0.9 kilograms per liter.
Yeah, so they're really similar.
Right.
Well, they probably are. They probably are pretty close. It's not like magnitudes difference. I'm sure it's just fractions difference.
Right, so maybe 20-30%, and not, and like I say, we can maybe somebody can make a comment on it on the blog, and
yeah, that can be easily looked up and referenced. That's not that hard to look up,
right?
Because both of them are composed of, there's a lot of water content in both of them, so the main thing that makes them gives them mass is the same element anyways.
Sure. So I guess the reason I'm saying that is because we get a lot of comments about, I weigh the same, but my body fat percentage is going down.
Yeah, but how do you validate that? You mean that needs to be measured?
Well, what I'm saying is, if you're looking on the scale and you weigh the same, then now you know that the way muscle mass, how slow it grows, that there's no possible way that if you lose a pound of muscle, you're going to replace it with a pound. If you lose a pound of fat, that you're going to replace with a pound of muscle in the same time period.
No, fat can fluctuate way faster than muscle can.
Right.
And the other issue here is people think that they can somehow make muscle size change to up or down. They think they can lose muscle as fast as they can lose fat with fat, which they can't. And they think they can gain muscle as fast as they can gain fat, which they can't. It takes a lifetime to build muscle.
Right. So I just wanted to point that out because I know I hear that. I've heard that for the longest time. I was actually talking to a lady the other day about
that's the sort of stuff personal trainers will say to clients who that's part of the scam of the personal training industry, because they know that they can't get their clients to lose fat in the gym. Like, you just can't. People spend all kinds of money. I have friends who has a group. I have a friend who, him and his wife, spent about 12 grand on personal training. And he's big. Like, he was 350 pounds when he went. She pretty big too. And they, well, I mean, she's a big girl. And the trainer, and he's looking at them, and he's, it's not really the trainer's fault. Like, the gym talks them into all this stuff, and they're trying to put their best foot forward. They're not losing any fat in that gym. Like, they gotta stop eating. They gotta stop crushing all the food that they eat on a daily basis. And the trainer can't stop them from doing that. So he tries to work them out, and then he tries to give them this nonsense about, oh, well, even though you're not getting any lighter, you're more of your body is lean muscle and you're less fat mass. And I'm like, if that's the case, you should be the strongest human being on earth if you're 300 pounds and most of that's muscle. Like, that's absurd. So, but that's the excuse the trainer will give, that, you know, why the scale hasn't changed, because people think they can exercise away fat, which they can't.
Right, and he wants to keep his money coming in.
Well, I mean, it's kind of a sad position trainers are in, because they realize they can't do anything of what people pay them for. People don't pay them for exercise technique coaching. People pay them to change the look of their body, which they can't do without changing their diets.
Sure. Oh, I told you the story. I think I might have told the story on the podcast about how we put in this big training class, this group training class. It was personal training. I mean, it was really hardcore, and we had a bunch of people getting results, because they were kind of, you know, we had somebody on nutrition handling that and giving some good advice, and, you know, they were just basically getting the shit beat out of them on these in these training classes, right? And it was weights and all this stuff, and mostly women, but there was one lady who just was not losing any weight, and she wasn't changing anything, and it was sad, because we couldn't figure out what the hell was going on. You know, they were talking to her, trying to find out what she was eating and stuff like that, and then one day, one of the trainers went out with her to get her checkbook. And when she opened the car door of the passenger side, there was like 50 McDonald's biscuit wrappers that just fell out. I mean, just barreled out of the side of this car, right? And it was just like...
Well, there's your answer.
Busted, right? You know what I'm saying? It's like busted.
Well, it's the idea of fixing more with more. It's like you're not going to deal with your diet, so you'll somehow try to exercise it all away.
Sure. Anyway, we beat that part up.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we've beaten that thing to death before. So, you know, I guess we should wrap up here. So I guess the point, I mean, I don't know how these all come together. I guess the idea of why you can't eat your way to bigger muscles feeds into the fitness industry marketing, which comes back to our little headline talk about ambiguous goals and trying to sell you ideas of getting stuff done, you know, quicker than you can actually do it. Like all of these, like get, you know, drop body fat in 5 days and bigger arms in 6 weeks and all of that stuff. As far as muscle building goes, you just can't. There's just no way of eating your way to bigger muscles. If you can't accept that fact and you still want to try, go take all your measurements. If you're gonna eat more and try to eat your way to bigger muscles, and you don't want to take our opinion and you want to try it, at least take all your measurements, like all your arms, legs, chest, shoulders, and your waist, most importantly. And if your waist is what's gaining quicker, I mean, that's your answer right there. If none of the other things change and your waist changes, you kind of know that all that extra food's just going into fat mass. And again, take an inventory of how you look. Like actually do before pictures and chart your leanness. And if your leanness is smoothing out, I mean, that's it. There's nothing else to say about it. And if your measurements are going up, but at the same time you're becoming less lean all over, like let's say you have, you know, good definition in your arms and you can see, you know, that, you know, veins up into your bicep. And then after like 4 weeks, that vein kind of fades and you can't see it anymore. But your arm measurement goes up. You know, that's because your arm is fatter and has some more water retention in it. So, it's just the accepting the idea that muscles grow slowly. And that are you really willing to spend most of the year in a bloated sort of fat state just to try to get to a point where you need to cut down just to see what little muscle you built? So is that even wrapping up, or did I just start the whole thing over?
Yeah, I think you just opened up a new can of worms, but that's fine. That's fine. I mean, that's.
I guess the point is, if you want, we don't think it's possible. I can't find any scientific literature that says it's possible. If you still want to try it, at least take your measurements to prove to yourself whether or not it's working.
Yeah, and when you say scientific literature, you mean a body of evidence.
Yeah, not one study. I mean the bulk of the research does not suggest that that's possible.
Right, exactly. And so, and if it hasn't popped out overwhelmingly by now, then obviously,
well, that's
kind of the thing. It would be like the three-headed dragon. If it were possible, it would be like, oh, you would know it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So. All right, guys. Well, I hope we answered some questions on this one and not really confused you anymore, because, you know, obviously went over some headlines, talked about some good stuff, talked about muscle gaining and how much to eat, kind of back into that one. So for John Barbin, I am Brad Howard, and this is your Adonis Lifestyle Podcast.